Hey, everybody, welcome back to another lovely Oversharing show, episode number 5. And today we have a whole host of virtual. I mean, I know we used the word virtual cornucopia before, so I'll just say we have a ton of topics to talk about. We actually spent, an hour and a half on the phone last night, a little longer talking about this stuff, preparing. So we have a very well prepared show for you today. Sometimes we just like shoot from the hip and it's a little crazy. Oh, you know what? I didn't change my background, but that's right. While you're talking, I will. A little behind the scenes, everybody. All anyway, right. What's up, Sharon? How are you today?
I'm great.
Awesome.
The wind is blowing. I have the windows open. It's a really pretty day.
Oh, that's awesome. It's raining here and the wind is blowing, but I'm in the basement, so the windows down here are closed, but yeah, it's a pretty nasty day, but I was out and it's pretty nice. I like it. I don't mind it.
Are you in a mud flooded basement?
Yeah. I hope not.
Okay.
So what are we talking about today? Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say something silly. Like, do your windows... does the basement level start and then you have like a half a window peeking over the top?
No, I'm not that okay. Cool, unfortunately. Okay. Yeah, those are all fun right. Though.
Yeah, sounds cool. Yeah, so we have a topic about the scarcity of resources and how we can look at this in light of where we're at right now in terms of what we went through last year, 2020, and how lots of people are opening their eyes to a lot of things right now, especially truth and deception and lies. So that is basically kind of what frames this whole topic that we have.
And what is that topic?
The fake scarcity of resources.
We have a scarcity of resources of things to talk about. No, we never do on the show. So I think the what we're going to talk about is how it's really about like fear pornography. Yes, I remember to say it. There's all these scarcity resources, and I guess we could back up and kind of define exactly what that is for people who don't know what we're talking about. So one of the easiest examples to use, I would say, would probably be oil. Now you hear a lot of people saying that we're going to run out of oil. And I think in my life, I remember hearing that a bunch. And then I kind of thought it was something new. I didn't, I never really looked back in history to see, hey, were there any other times where they said that we're going to run out of oil? And if you look back in history, I mean, there's a bunch of times when they said that we're going to run out of oil, and it goes all the way back to like the late 1800s. So people have then surmised off of all these different resources that people say, are scarce and we got to fight over them and we got to, protect them. They're saying that what if they weren't really that scarce and it was just, maybe it's just a false assumption that people are making for one reason or another. We could talk about that after also, why people are coming to these conclusions. But if that wasn't the case, what are the possibilities? But we'll get into that as well. But really, that's really what scarcity of resources is talking about, and false scarcity. That's really what we mean when we say false scarcity. We think that in some areas there could be, for some reason, this assumption that we're going to run out of food or we're going to run out of water or whatever it is. So that's what we're going to be talking about exactly today.
Yeah. And I believe you had mentioned that Crow has done some episodes on scarcity of things like gold and diamonds and oil and things like that. I didn't get to dig to find out which episode numbers those are, but everyone's free to see if they can find those old episodes. I might go back and dig myself.
Yeah, I know one of the episodes was after the 300 mark, and they were talking about scarcity of resources with oil, diamonds, and gold. And then that's really when I learned, it kind of blew my mind. I knew already about diamonds. I've heard of this a long time ago. Basically what happens is, if you're not aware of it, allegedly there are all these diamond companies. This is something that's kind of well known. It's like one of these conspiracies that people all know about, that all these diamond companies have giant warehouses allegedly of diamonds, and if they were to release them onto the market, it would make diamonds pretty much value zero, like in money, like really, really low. They would still have intrinsic value, obviously, in in manufacturing and stuff like that. People would still use them, but there wouldn't be a sought after. You wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't have to spend all this money for a diamond ring. So people say they keep it that way so they could profit or whatever it is. And I mean, if they're doing it, I guess it's their right to do it. But so this is something I came across when I was, probably in the 90s, something I heard about, because I traveled to, when I was in the Marine Corps, I traveled to the Mediterranean. We're supposed to go to Israel. And I think they said that diamonds are really cheap there. And they also said diamonds are cheap in Africa. And then somebody was talking about how, what the case is, you know, how they keep them kind of scarce in the United States. So that was my first kind of look into it. And then, so I knew about that. And then when I listened to the Crow 777 episode, he then talked about gold. And this is something that I didn't realize. And basically the long and short of that is that all these gold companies that mine gold have all these mines that they are aware of, that if they were to go mine that gold and pull it all out, it'd kind of be the same situation. It would devalue the gold that we have a lot of in circulation, basically. And also one of the things he talked about was all these mining companies. Sometimes they'll say it's a copper mine, or sometimes they'll say it's like a different mine, like zinc or whatever, and they're actually going to be mining gold alongside it to pay for it. So there's all these ways that gold enters the market that we're not aware of, and that they're able to keep the price, or whoever, I hate to say they, but the price is able to be kept stable somehow through this, what would appear to be deception, maybe, or just not totally being honest about it. I don't know, but that's what really blew my mind. And then when they talked about oil, I kind of had a hunch about that, but, and this is the thing, they didn't really, when it came to oil, they just went and kind of explored all the past rhetoric that was talked about oil. You know, what was the government, what was the media always saying? And they were basically saying we're going to be running out of oil all the way back to like the late 1800s. They were saying this stuff, we're going to run out. And then they would just find some miracle thing, or they wouldn't talk about it. And again, it seemed to line up with presidential races and like political things that were going on and wars. So it just seemed to be maybe a distraction or something that was going on at the time. I'm not really sure, but again, these are just things we come across, and it's an uncomfortable fact. And we don't like to go too deep down rabbit holes on the show. That's not really what it's about, but we're just trying to point a light on the true nature of this realm that we live in, and our resources really that scarce, you know?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, with the diamond thing, the whole diamond scarcity thing, I watched a video. I want to say it was like a good couple of years ago. And of course, I can't find it anymore because it was on YouTube. But this guy had said something to the effect of all diamonds these days are pretty much, they're not necessarily mined. They're pretty much made in a laboratory, because you know, you have the cubic zirconia and stuff like that. Basically he was saying the whole like blood diamond stuff was a scam and it was a lie, and that the diamonds you see today, really, they're just all made in a lab, and they just tell you they're super precious and super hard to obtain with the whole blood diamond thing, so that you pay more for them and stuff like that. I wish I could find that video, but it's probably deleted, gone forever. Yeah.
I even have something I could add to this, because in the early 2000s, I was in the car business. And in the car business, you come across all kinds of people. And I ran across this guy who was selling cars, but he's also a jewelry expert. Like, he sold jewelry on the side. People would come there to not only buy cars from him, but then also buy all kinds of stuff. So when it was downtime, we would just talk and I would just pick his brain. And he would tell me, he's like, listen, I could get simulated diamonds that, you know, only the top jewelers really could tell the difference. Like you can make them and there's really no way. So he's like, it's so hard to tell what's fake and what's not. And then just by that little experience of him telling me, and again, this is nothing against you. I don't even have to watch a YouTube video to know that, oh, of course that shit's happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, you really got to be good. So of course, I'm sure a lot of stuff, if that was early 2000s and he was just some regular Joe Schmo, what about the stuff that he doesn't know about? You know, like, yeah, I'm sure that's definitely a thing. So then again, you take that and it's one of these things people, if you're going to ask, I mean, I guess it's pretty obvious why you would do it. But if other people be like, why would people do this? And it's kind of to just maintain your thing. It doesn't even have to be a grand conspiracy. At the end of the day, everyone's just kind of going to work and doing their job. The guy that's selling diamonds is selling diamonds. The guy that's mining them, you know, everyone's just kind of doing their thing. And at the end of the day, it's kind of a manifestation of the world itself, of the negative reflection of nature. So people are just going to their work and they're not really thinking about it. They're not putting thought into it. They're just more worried about getting done in the weekend, you know, which I can relate to. So
yeah,
we're not pointing fingers there. Not yet, maybe, but anyway.
Totally.
Yeah.
And when it comes to oil and the shortage of oil, there's this guy that I saw on a YouTube video again. This was again a couple of years ago, probably. And he was saying, or highlighting the fact that when they were telling you that it was a fossil fuel, that these dinosaur bones had, you know, turned into this dark black oil that, you know, is scarce. That was the whole way that they manipulated it to be like a scarcity thing, because, oh, the dinosaurs died to give us fossil fuel, allegedly oil from their bones.
Yeah. And it's funny because stories like that, you kind of just take them because they're told to you when you're young, and then they just become kind of like pillars of the foundation and you don't even question them. But then when you look at them through the eyes of a child, like a child, like inquisitiveness, you're like, what? How many dinosaurs then must there have been? I mean, I understand there could have been millions and billions if it's been on forever, but like, it's a rare thing for that putrefaction to happen anyway, because most things that die just, you know, get eaten by nature. So it's like, dude, what? And then I don't know. Anyway, we don't have to make claims, but I will say we can reference one of the videos that's on my channel. It's a show I used to do with two other comedians, and we basically debunked the existence of dinosaurs, allegedly. So if you're somebody who's like, wait, what? You don't believe in dinosaurs existed? This is the thing. It's not that I believe it or I don't believe it. The story, when I looked into it, were the people who say they discovered it and all that stuff. It's probably one of the easiest quote unquote conspiracies to, like, it's a starter one I used to start people with, because it's so ridiculous that they're like, by the end of it, most people are like, yeah, probably dinosaurs didn't exist. Like, yeah, like, can we talk about something else now? I need to drink. They're like, yes, this is crazy. But anyway, funny story. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And there's a lot of other alleged shortages that are going on right now. I have a friend in Philly who tells me, you know, within the last several months, he's told me a couple of times that, yeah, I've gone to this grocery store and I see the sign that says coin shortages. And so it's, I mean, I might have seen that maybe once or twice here as well, several months ago. I haven't seen it recently. So it's funny because it's like, oh, when they feel like it, they'll tell you there's a shortage of coin, or there's a shortage of this, or there's a shortage of that. And like you said, like with the oil, they were telling us like every so many years, they'd be like, oh, it's going to run out by like this year. And then like that year would come and no one would say anything. And then everything was fine. And then they say it again and be like, oh no, this time we're really, really going to run out by this year. And then again, that year would pass. And it's just like a cycle. They just do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And they were basically in this crow episode, they were just going back through what the media was reporting. Right. And honestly, it's really up to the people. I mean, if we're falling for it, it's our fault. You know, I mean, what our grandfather couldn't say, they used to say this shit back in my day, and his grandfather too. What the hell? It's a scam. You know, so, but that's what stuff like this show is all about. You know, we're trying to get these things out there and share it with people. And the coin shortage is something that I've seen myself here in the great state of Connecticut. I saw a bunch of signs everywhere. Everyone's like, if you have coins, bring them down. There's coin shortages. And it just feels contrived to me because it was so in line with the 2020, like when everything happened, the shutdowns and all this stuff, it kind of happened at the same time. So I don't know if it was something like some master plan of people or people just started hoarding change. You know what I mean? Because I don't know how this all works. So maybe it was real. Maybe people were just like, I got to keep my change. And they just started rolling all their quarters and stuff. I don't know. But it would seem to go in line if you look at the ways that people who, quote unquote, want to control society, all the stuff that they've written about, a lot of it, if you read it, they do talk about how these people would love to get rid of cash and stuff. So, you know, it could be a step toward that. But again, it's all stuff we're doing to ourselves at the end of the day. You know, like we could just keep our coins, or do we really even need them, or and stuff like that. But yeah, it's more, I think, about being in the psychological operation of it. Right. So now it's like, wow, it's real. Look, the coin shortages are happening. There's toilet paper shortages. There's all this stuff. So it makes it really feel real at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Yeah. And then you have the food shortages that some people are seeing, and people are going to their grocery stores, and the packages that their aisles were lined with are either gone or very scarce. And that too is lately is a big, I see it as a big lie, because I don't see that things could really be so scarce. Like, oh, really, this alleged thing that just happened in 2020, really, that made food go scarce? That makes zero logic.
Yeah. What it really, you're right. It doesn't make any sense at all. But what it really highlights is how we get our food. But I do want to back up a second and just say that, like, this rumor of food shortages, I've been hearing since at least Y2K, right? I was like 24 in the year 2000, I think, right? When it turned, 23, 24. So anyway, I was past college graduate age, right? I was out of the Marine Corps. And I remember talking to this guy, and he was telling me about how the, you know, it's common knowledge now. It's all the stuff that everybody knows about food supply chains and how they're so fragile. But he's explaining this to me in 1999. And he's like, listen, there's only enough food in a grocery store. And I'm like, wow, you know, and he's like, if this happens, blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of scared. I bought a couple extra cans because I didn't go really crazy. Nothing happened. And then after that, every few years, there was always something on the horizon. And then the big one was 2012, right? Everything's going to collapse, food shortages. And then I just saw this pattern. So I'm not trying to say that there can't be food shortages. Maybe that's what this is all echoing and leading up to, because they are correct. But it is. Yeah. See, my cat's going crazy. He knows. I think it's another aspect of this fear pornography, you know, but that's not to say that you shouldn't be ready. I just don't want to be triggering people with a food shortage talk. You know, I think it's another aspect of a way to get people in line with fear and fear pornography and to listen to what the government is telling them to do, or whoever, you know, the official sources are telling us to do. And going on food shortages, I mean, Sharon, what's the best solution to that?
Growing your own food, perhaps.
Yeah. Like, is there a real shortage? Is there a real scarcity of resources in the area of food?
Right. It reminds me of the topic of, quote, world hunger, which we've seen over the years, right? I remember when I was young and they would talk about these babies in Africa with big bellies because they were so starving. And they had little skinny arms and everything. They just looked completely, it was just, it made you sad, but they were doing that on purpose. I mean, I'm not saying that those babies weren't hungry, but what they were doing was, they were just putting these images in front of you to cause this kind of trauma, this traumatic feeling in you, as if you yourself were responsible for those babies being hungry, which you can't help the whole world. Like, each person has to help themselves, right? And yes, could one of us like say, you know what, I have the means and ability to go to a place like that and help them, and help them learn, relearn how to grow their own food or whatever it is that they needed? Could I help them do that? Yeah. I mean, there are people who can do that, but this whole concept of like, give money to this organization to, you know, stop, end world hunger and blah, blah, blah. It's like, those were the corporations that, and those alleged organizations were corporations that were just banking on your, you know, traumatic feeling and your compassion to donate money. And it's sick.
Yeah, exactly. And I think at the end of the day, the way we could frame this is, even if it's not like you, because what you could say is they run these commercials like the Sally Struthers commercials. Remember those? South Park did an excellent episode attacking those. But Sally Struthers used to be on all the time, be like, you got to send food for, I forgot what it was called. I don't know, it'll come back to me, but they always would have these commercials on and they'd show these starving kids, like you were saying. So they're, you know, these people are probably taking advantage of it, probably making money off of it or whatever. And then, so people are sending it, but then sending their money. So that's the first layer. But then the second layer is what, like you said, what it's doing emotionally and psychologically to all the kids that are watching these commercials, all the children, people coming up. You know, they live in this land of plenty over here in the United States, and they're like, oh my God, they feel so guilty about it. So what does that do to them, you know, as a person? And like, I remember in third grade, and I know we talked about this last night, we had a big drive to collect money for the starving Ethiopians. Right. And now I'm learning that Ethiopia used to be like this beautiful paradise, lush place, like the best coffee in the world comes from Ethiopia, allegedly. So, you know, but we were told that all these people, and again, there could have been some people starving. I'm sure there were, but why were they starving? Why are we just sending them money for their food? Can't we just, you know, maybe we can help them out in other ways, or maybe we can, like you said, help them to help themselves, or what's really going on? Who's taking advantage of them? Is it the same ones that's showing us the commercials? You know, is it the people? Are they connected? Is the reason why these people are in poverty, you know, are there people above them keeping them or somehow allowing that to happen? Are they connected to the people also collecting money for this poverty? You know, you have to ask yourself these questions. And when you start to, and you start to figure out that's what's going on, it's really mind blowing. And again, it just dispels this whole narrative of scarcity of resources. There doesn't have to be a shortage of food. That's what I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what brought me to that realization recently, not that I didn't know that already, but it just magnified it for me, is on the Beartaria app, I've seen people post pictures of their plants and their vegetables that they're growing. And I saw someone post something about one fruit or one, perhaps a vegetable. I can't remember what it was, maybe a pumpkin or maybe a tomato or something, but it talked about how like one of those produced, I don't know how many seeds, hundreds of seeds that then they could give to someone else. And that person could take one of those hundreds and make another plant and then grow more of those. And it's like exponential growth. It's like, it's not even, all you have to do, like Crow says, is go back to nature, grow the food. Like all you have to do is plant that seed, know when the season is to plant it, let it grow, and you can grow your own food if you need to. But the problem is, you know, of course we have industrialization and we have created these grocery stores that feed us. And so now we're relying upon those things and we don't remember how to grow our own food. Not everybody, right? Some people are going back to learning that stuff, but basically that any plant that you have like that, vegetable, you can grow exponentially more from just the seeds. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And again, it's, the world we exist in, you can only start where you find yourself and what we're doing. And, you know, like I started a garden to grow some things and you mentioned the Beartari Times app. There's a lot of people, but it's not like we could just go overnight to feeding ourselves. We're still going to have to depend on the world, but I think it's more about building the confidence of doing it and then realizing that you don't need the world so much. And then maybe you could start to work less at your job. And what I wanted to say about the seeds, to go back to that, the other thing, the really important part of that is it takes a seed, but also takes your attention and your time. And what I found, what putting my attention and time into a garden was just a really good way to spend my time. It was, you know, there was no anxiety involved in it really. It was, the only anxiety was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with these plants? Or I got to do this. It was that kind of stuff, but I wasn't worried about the problems of the day. It was like a meditation. Right. And it was really an investment in my own future. And then the future of people around me, because then I gave a lot of tomatoes away to friends and stuff. So it felt really good to do that as well. But again, this is how we just start to reclaim ourselves and take back our own lives. And really, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're kind of stepping out of a system of slavery, could it be? And when I say that, I've talked about this before, it's just a slavery to yourself. You're just a slave to your own mind, or you're a master to your own mind. And if you're a slave to your own mind, there's people who are masters of their own mind that are probably taking advantage of you in some way. You could just look at it as, it's not always a way of taking advantage of you. You know, sometimes it's a mutual beneficial arrangement. Sometimes somebody starts a business because they have more skills about running a business and stuff like that. And then you work for them and it's mutually beneficial. But what I'm talking about is stepping out of this whole system of dependency on, like you said, something that doesn't make sense. If it's a local business and it's your friend, stuff like that, this makes more sense because it's local. But if it's a giant corporation that relies on these supply chains that are so susceptible to breaking down, they're so, you know, right now we're having supply chain issues because allegedly there's this medical procedure that people want people to take and some people don't want to take it. So that's what's slowing down. So it's not even like a real, it looks more like a manufactured thing to me. You know, I could see if things are blown up and burning down and stuff like that, but still it's, if you work for some giant corporation that is reliant on the supply chain, on the whole global or whatever it is, this worldwide network, it's going to be more vulnerable. It used to appear that it was a lot more stable, right? Like in the 2010, 2015, but now you could see that it actually isn't as stable as once thought. So it's one of these things that you really got to be careful, and people are fighting for their jobs now. And it's like, is your job even going to be there, you know, in a couple months or years or whatever. So that's another thing about scarcity of resource, because it's about the scarcity and resource of your time, of your own time on this, in this realm, on this earth, right? You only have so much of it. And if you're giving so much of it to another corporation, you're really just cheating yourself at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. So this whole concept of like one seed can provide an exponential amount of food in return to you. I see that as a threat to, you know, these people who want to cause the scarcity of food in the world. And with that, I can see that the way they've hybridized food, especially plants and vegetables and fruit and everything, they remove the seeds. And why would they remove the seeds? So you can't grow anymore. Like, you take one from the grocery store, you eat it, but there's nothing for you to do with it. You just throw the skin of the orange away, and that's it. No seeds.
It's a great business model.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I mean, it's for people who are supplying the food, and if we're reliant and we're dependent on them, and most people don't even want seeds in their food. So it's like, they're giving people what they want at the end of the day, and that's why it's up to people like us that realize this, to do our own thing, start our own garden, barter with people, find people, local farmers, you could get a cow. If you like meat, you could find a couple of people and just get a cow and bring it to a local butcher from a, cow from a local, cow farmer. I don't mean just go steal a cow. I mean, whatever. I'm not giving advice here. But yeah, it's hard to do. It takes more of your time and attention, but in that, you make friends, you meet some really good people most of the time. And, you're really saving money in the long run. And again, you're taking your time and your attention back and doing it, putting it into something where it's like an act of self-love. It's saying to yourself, I'm important enough to, put more than 10, 15 minutes or a day's preparation to my meal. I'm going to take a long stance. Like, I'm going to hunt for this elk or a deer, and then I'm going to go get with a bunch of my friends and get a cow, and we're going to have it slaughtered. It's like a whole, it's a way to show yourself some love again, also at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. And there are, even here in metropolitan Phoenix, where I live, there are places, nearby farms, that do and offer cow shares, and you can go in on half a cow or a quarter of a cow. And that's a lot. That's a lot of meat. So if you have a freezer or something in your garage or whatever, you can store the meat there and, use it throughout the year, throughout your months that you're trying to feed yourself. But like you said, yeah. It not only is it probably going to be cheaper in the long run for you, even though it may seem expensive, like in one fell swoop, but it's also healthy, because most of those cows are grass fed and grass finished, and they're not fed hormones or given hormones, and they're not fed anything junky. So they're very healthy animals if you're going to eat them, if you're going to eat meat,
Yeah. And that'll save you money in the long run, because then allegedly, could it be, you would seem that you would run into less health issues down the road. So you might not be as dependent on, hospitals and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a big picture implication to all this stuff. And that's what we're kind of hinting at, So anyway.
Yeah. And, so that whole topic of the world hunger brings me and Brandon to the topic of this alleged high population that we have in the world. 7.8 billion people in the world. Yeah. And only 330 million of those here in the U.S. So if you take 7.8 billion and you subtract 330 million, you still have 7.5 billion people somewhere else. Where are they?
How dare you, Sharon?
It's ridiculous amount of
borderlining on making claims right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I am. I apologize. I'm questioning is what I'm doing.
Yeah, no,
I said, where are they?
Yeah, you did. I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know you are. I know.
I think it's a valid question to ask. And if you're somebody who's new to this idea of the population not being exactly what we've been told, that's this other idea that a lot of people have been talking about lately. I've been onto this for a while because, and this is stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to bring our own experience again. Like, I've been all over the world, and everywhere I go, I run into somebody I know, yep. And it's like, that's one of these things. And it's like, yeah, it's a crazy coincidence. And maybe, maybe I'm Jesus and it's a miracle or whatever, but
it's a small world.
World after all. Like, I was in Italy and I ran it to somebody I knew. Like, and I've been, and I'm from Connecticut, which is the East Coast of the United States. I've been to Vegas and ran into people I knew, you know. It's so crazy. Yeah. So
I was in London Heathrow, and I was wishing that I was like, I wish I had someone here with me so I could just go to the restroom without taking these freaking bags with me. And then I see a coworker. I'm like, and totally different. Like we weren't coworkers that like spoke often. We weren't in the same department. We weren't even going to the same thing. Like we just happened to be flying same day, same time frame. It was just bizarre. And I'm like, can you watch my stuff? He's like, yeah. And then we went to dinner. It was all good. It was awesome.
That's so great. Yeah, I love that stuff. You know, it is definitely a wink and a nod from the universe and stuff like that. But I just think things like that. And then if you really start to go down some of these rabbit holes of the census and how they keep track of people and who's telling what, there really is not a reliable way to accurately, I guess, calculate how many people are here. And I think that it's just too beneficial for other people you know, it's such a tool of control. That's what people don't realize. And at the end of it, it's such a psychological operation. I guess we can back up and talk about it a little bit more. What are some other things you want to bring up? But I mean, it really is like at the root core of so many things. You know, a lot of people don't have children because they're so worried that there's so many people on the planet. They get in despair mode all the time. And they're really sad because they think about all these people who are like starving and there's just no room for any more people. So it's really just this thing that does a number on people, or they let it do a number on them, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Well, the other day I was listening to a Crow episode and he said something to the effect of, yeah, Jason, remember when you and I did that episode on the population numbers and them being ridiculously higher than we would think they should be? And I'm not quoting him, I'm paraphrasing, but I went looking for that episode and I found it. It's episode 135. It's from back in November 22nd. Of 2018 when he did that episode, so pretty much 3 years ago. And back then in that episode, he said 7.5 billion. So here we are 3 years later and it's now 7.8 billion because allegedly, and I saw this number somewhere else, online, that the population increase is estimated at 81 million people per year. So if you do the math, you're more like 7.74 or something like that. But, you know, they're saying 7.8 billion. It reminds me of billions and bajillions and zillions of light years away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when they start going billions and zillions and quadrillions, then you're just kind of like,
I think, you know,
eyes glaze over.
Yeah, it's human nature to just be like, okay, it's just when you trust the experts that know all the facts and it's just like, okay, then I guess you just got to trust it. But instinctually, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like I said, again, I traveled a lot of places and most places I've traveled to are just empty spaces of nobody. You know, you fly over all these areas, you drive for hours, nothing. And then
exactly.
You get to some places where there's people, and then you get to some centers where it's insane. People are on top of each other like rats, you know. And I get it. If you're in that area, then you might then start to form a worldview where you're like, wow, everywhere is like this. And you start to watch TV and that's all they show. And, you know, but at the end of the day, I can't get behind that number. And the other thing is like, everything officially that I've been told, when I start to go down rabbit holes, I realize that it's either some kind of lie or askew or it's whatever it is. So I just can't get behind this. You know, it's like, it's probably, yeah. And I've seen a lot, like, you know, like you said, there's just so much evidence for it. And in that episode, I definitely recommend checking out. I'm sure Sharon will send me a link and we'll put it in the episode down below. And I listened to it as well. It was a really good episode. And I advise people, if they're going to listen to it, the paid part, the second hour that you actually have to pay for, is the really good part, because the end, they talk about the replacement numbers in the US, like how many like couples and how many kids are having, and what level of replacement, like 2.1, you have to have like above a certain area to actually maintain your population. And they're showing all these numbers that it looks like the populations are actually headed toward collapsing instead of overpopulating. So it actually is not even that it's that what we're being told is a lie. It's actually the direct opposite of what's going on. It could
exactly
be, and that's what's going on. And if you see and you hear that for yourself, then the other thing that they said at the end of the episode was really mind blowing, was like, well, they're saying, you know, you need like, you have to have like 3 kids per couple to have some kind of explosion. And then they're saying that, and then they go, well, okay, if you say, if you take the world number that they say it was of population in the late 1800s or the early 1920s up to now, he's like, every couple would have had to have like 7 or 8 kids. Like every person would have had to have like maybe even more, like they would have had to have like 12. It's insane.
Wow.
So that's another way why it doesn't make sense. They're like, you just look at it that way instead of, you know, the other ways that they talk about it. And you're like, yeah, easily there's no way. I mean, yeah, people used to have more kids back then, but not everybody had like 12 or whatever it was kids. But yeah, I would recommend going and checking that episode out. You know, like I said, you have to support them for like $7 and you can get it or whatever. But yeah, it's good stuff. Or just take our word for it. I don't care. But if you don't, go back and listen. It's really good, because we definitely have, the numbers aren't totally right, but what we're saying is right as far as it looks like a lot of these. And it's funny because all the other, you know, it looks like populations of people that are like European or white or whatever, like first world, are the ones that are going to be collapsing, and thus like the third world ones are the ones that look like they're actually having kids, so they'll be okay. It's really kind of strange. So anyway.
Yeah. I felt like the conclusion for that Crow episode was that the population is in absolute decline, not rising. So how they're saying that it's rising makes absolutely no sense. But yeah, they gave tons of examples. And they, at the very beginning, they talked about how it was actually an engineered agenda of artificial scarcity.
Yeah. And, yeah. There's plenty of documentation, you know. Yeah, again, if you want to go down these rabbit holes, you could see it. It's outlined, people that are masters of their own mind, and then they decide that they want to be the quote unquote controllers of society. They outline this stuff and they talk about it and they get together in meetings. It's not a secret. But at the end of the day, we're the ones choosing to go along with it. So, but yeah, it's out there, man. It's crazy. And I think it has to be out there, because then it's really a choice at the end of the day, where that's how people who are in control could probably sleep at night. They say, hey, we're letting them know, you know, they're just going with it. They're just useless eaters, but you know, so.
It's in a book somewhere and they have the opportunity to read it if they want to.
That's right.
Whatever. Right. But one of the examples that was really powerful for me to kind of see as well was the concept of women being, you know, kind of put into the workforce in, you know, industrialization and all that stuff after the 50s. Like in the 60s, and then the age of childbearing, you know, going up from the 20s to the 30s. And so either fewer children or no children, potentially. I'm not saying that that's what they said, but I mean, it's easy to see that some people choose animals over having children because their work comes first. And so definitely you can see that there. And all of this just makes me wonder about the Georgia Guidestones and what they say, because I believe their alleged target population is 500 million, which, what if, could it be that we're getting close to the 500 million and this 2020 is what was going to be used to kind of bring it closer to the 500 million that is alleged to be the target number?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we could already be living inside that world and not know it. it's could be possible, especially if the land mass isn't as big as they're saying, or I don't know. But what I could say is that with 2020, again, it's just a choice that people are doing, and the people who are having a hard time and struggling, the struggle is what makes people wake up. And if you don't wake up from it, it's all stuff that people at the end of the day are doing to themselves, really. And again, I know it sounds insensitive because a lot of people are in situations where they can't help it, but it seems that this whole world, it was a collective choice of people that chose where it was going to go. So I feel that if you want to change it, you could just change your own behavior and make different choices and choose to go in a different direction and get with like-minded people and do that. And then that is what is going to change your world, at least, you know?
Yeah. So onto a kind of a different topic, but kind of related, is this concept of hoarding that seems to be happening even in the last year. I remember people going, before this date, make sure you have 2 weeks worth of food and water. And before this date, make sure you have this, that, and the other. And it's like, so you go and you do that. And then that day comes and goes and nothing happens. And then they do it again. They do it like a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later. They just keep doing it over and over.
I wonder if it's going to get to a point, because remember I said like 2020, I'm sorry, Y2K, what it was. And then it came around like again in 2012, and then a couple times, and then now it seems to get sooner. And then like, remember your birthday, like a couple of weeks ago, was supposed to be like the end of the world again. Like,
oh my gosh.
So is it going to get to a point where like every day is going to be the end of the world? You know what I mean? Is that where we're going to head? Like tomorrow, yeah, it's going to be it, guys. Well, like I feel like that, you know? So I think like, even if it is the end of the world, what can you do to stop it? And if the grocery stores and all the shortages are going to come again, you can get yourself prepared and you could do stuff. But to fear it, to actually sit there and worry about it happening, you know, we've said this before, we'll say it again, we're all going to die. You know, it's going to happen. Obviously that's really horrible. And the way we're used to living before 2020 is a lot different than a place where we have to fight over food. But, I think that it's just so horrible that it keeps people's attention, and be wary of where you place your attention. Are you placing it in a garden and in, like doing stuff to kind of separate yourself from the system? Or are you just sitting there going, oh my God, I got to like hoard food and I got to buy all of, you know, Alex's Jones dehydrated food and all this stuff. And again, I'm not saying it's bad. Yeah. If you have dehydrated food, I'm jealous. I wish I had some laying around, but there's people who do that stuff and they get ready and they quote unquote prep, but they're not, it's not their daily mode. They're just, it's just in case some shit happens. And that's good. I think that's, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you're constantly just worried about it, but actually not doing anything, you're in a spiral. You're actually in purgatory. You're in a purgatory mode. You're just, all your attention's leaving you and someone else is harnessing it. I'm sure of it. I can assure you of that.
Yeah. So that basically, you're basically saying that we just need to go back to the present moment.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. If you get away from the fear of the future and you come back to the present moment and appreciate what you have now, and then you could see the changes that you can make to go forward in the future, that might make you less vulnerable to something like this happening, but you can only start where you are. And I think a lot of people come on to this because it's something new to them, you know, whereas I've always, like I said, like Y2K, I was alerted to this stuff. So for me, it's a little different. And I get it. If you're new and you just hear this and you're like, oh my God, and then you actually see it, you see toilet paper shortages and different things, it becomes real to you. You see coin shortages and it gets even scarier. But again, right now, everything is okay. Right now, you can go to the grocery store in most places and get what you need. There are running shortages and stuff like that, but it's all about being in the present moment. Enjoy it now, because even if those things happen, it gets terrible and your worst nightmare comes true. Well, guess what? This whole time when it was good, you could have been having a good time and enjoying yourself to some degree and enjoying the bountiful harvest around you. but you were just so worried about the future and then you kind of manifested it too, maybe. I don't know. That's also what happens when you focus on negative things. I've noticed in my life, it starts to happen. So quit thinking about it because you're going to put yourself in a FEMA camp or whatever it is. Yeah.
Right. Trust the universe's plan.
Yeah. And then if we have to go on a blaze of glory and I was wrong, just come to my house and I'll pass out the, you know, I'll pass out the Second Amendment. No, I'm just kidding. And we'll go do it. No, mount up, Patriots. No, I really don't. Yeah. That's the thing, man. It's like,
I thought you were going to say the Kool-Aid.
I'm just kidding. That too. Pass out the Kool-Aid. Brandon don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Speaking of taking the Kool-Aid, there's also this whole concept of in religion of this like scarcity of salvation.
Yeah, I'm so glad
you need a savior because you can't save yourself. And you have to go to the official sources to get external validation. Jesus saves, but only our brand of Christianity.
Yeah, I love that because this is something I was probably ranting about to you in a voice message, and then you wrote it down, and then we were able to revisit it. But it's so true because once you see, or once I was able to see the scarcity of resource thing in the physical sense, then you could start to put it into other, you could start to ask questions like we're doing here, right? You could start to say, hey, is there a scarcity of resource in spirituality? Like, are there institutions that are saying there's only so much to go around? You need to show up. You need to give us money. You need to give us a lot of your time and attention. You need to give us the tip of your kid's dick. You need to like baptize. You need to do all these things.
Keep the Sabbath day holy. Come to church every Sunday. Confess your sins. Take the Holy Communion.
Every sin you have, come to us, confess it, prophesize, you know, all these things. You have to pray 7 times a day. I'm just trying to involve all these religions, right? I'm not picking on just one here. Because I know Christians, you do get a lot of flack. And I know Muslims, like all these different brands of religion get a negative form of criticism that I don't
feel. But basically they're all doing the same thing. If there's like a, there's a thing to do and they're telling you, you must do this, then that's.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Right.
Yeah. No, I totally.
In any religion.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And that's where I'm going, but I'm just letting anyone who feels like we're threatening or coming at their religion specifically, we're not doing it exactly specifically because there's a lot of ideas in each religion that I like. I'm actually interested in the spirituality aspects of all of them. I think there's beautiful things
Absolutely.
Contained in all of them, but the element of control that's there is really where you have to watch out is what we're talking about at the end of the day. So it's like, if you have the spirituality or belief system or whatever it is, and are they making you come to them all the time? Like we're saying, you know, devote all your time and attention to us. That's the only way. And then what if you say, hey, what if I like to do my own thing and I found my own things, and then they condemn you to hell? It's like, is that what Jesus said? You know? So that's where the scarcity is. And again, I found, and I'm sure you have too, Sharon, in your life, because we've both been through different, of these, you know, different religions and different aspects of these control systems. But I found now the stuff that we're into is more more freeing and is actually real, I guess you could say. It actually has results for, and it's something that you could just do and rely on yourself or like-minded people, or not even. It's really more about being the person that's the star of each religion, you know, more about like being like Jesus or Krishna or all these people, than actually trying to praise or worship them or follow or give those people who are supposed to be the experts in that field. Here we go again. There's these experts in that field of religion, that priest or that bishop, or whatever, you're supposed to give him homage instead of live it yourself in your own life and not worry about that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
It all lines up in my view. It's all another. It's like, oh, once you start seeing it, you're just like, oh, it's like Scooby-Doo. You're like, I'm just going to take this mask off again. Ah, it's just scarcity of resources again.
Yeah. I remember when I started seeing it, I was going to the last church where Dre and I were going. And, you know, I had come out of this cult that I was participating in. When I was pretty much born into it, but we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, years and years later, I decided to go back to church, and I found this other church, and it seemed kind of more less culty and more just normal, I suppose. And I was like, well, I'm going to learn. I'm going to see what this is all about from this perspective, because I know the cult perspectives, but I don't know maybe like the general generic Christian perspective. So here I am. And every time we did the, what they would call the communion or the breaking bread or the table or the Lord's table or whatever they called it, everybody gives it a different little nuanced name. But I started questioning, like, what am I doing? Like, what is this? What am I participating in? Is this valid? Does it mean anything? What am I supposed to be doing? Like, why are they passing out all these wafers and then cups with juice? Because it was literally like grape juice. It wasn't even wine. If it were wine, I'd be like, I'll have wine. That's fine. But I'm not having grape juice from concentrate with like high fructose corn syrup. I mean, I don't know, right? I don't know what the kind of juice they were using, but I'm just saying. So the funny part was like Dre and I, we ate very clean and we didn't eat things that had certain ingredients, and we wouldn't drink like juice like that either. So we both would decline the juice and we just take the little cups of water because they would do water as well for, I think, for the kids sometimes. So we would take the little cups of water. And then I found out from their like flyer, from their bulletin, that their little wafers were made of, I think they had some soy product or something like that. And I'm just like, I'm not going to eat something that I'm just not going to eat it. Like, why am I going to eat
body of Christ
thing?
Is soy.
Soy boy. I'm just kidding. So I
if it was actually human flesh, I'd be like, all right, you guys, I'd eat it. Cause then I'm not a cannibal, but like you're dedicated to the cause and I can respect that. But you're fucking soy, dude. Like, come on.
Are you saying Jesus was made of soy?
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So I would not. So they would pass the plate. Oops. They would pass the plate thing. Right. And you're supposed to take a little soy wafer thing and then, or whatever it was. I can't remember what ingredient it had that I was not going to eat. And then they had the little cups, whether it was water or wine. And I will always take the water, right? And Dre would also do the same. He would just take water, no wafer. I would take water, no wafer. And then we'd pass it along, right? Well, one time, so bizarre, the guy, because Dre and I would always sit at the end, like he would sit on the last seat and I would sit on the seat next to him. Well, the guy comes and gives him a thing and Dre only takes the water. And he's like pushing it toward him, like, aren't you going to take the wafer? And Dre's like declining it. And it's almost like he was like, aren't you going to take the wafer or the juice? It's like, dude, seriously, why are you trying to force somebody to do something they don't want to freaking do? Like, it just was bizarre to me.
He's like, we got free juice. Don't you want free juice?
They just want you to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, there's something in that Kool-Aid. I don't know. It's about the submission, I think, really is what it's about.
Yeah,
it reminds me of a certain medical device that people are wearing a lot in stores. But anyway, that's a different story.
Oh, yeah?
It's like that, right? Like, why aren't you wearing the... Why can't I see your smiling face? And yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
They get so when they're participating in a group activity and everyone's doing it and then one person doesn't want to, they get really uptight. It's highlighted really well in like Seinfeld too. You see that a lot. Yeah.
That one was hilarious.
So true.
The ribbon, AIDS
ribbon with
Kramer. Wearing the ribbon.
Yeah.
How dare you?
And there's a lot of that though. That's one example of it. But if you watch that show, there's so much of it because he was counterculture, I guess, or whatever. But yeah, it's pretty funny. So I don't know, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. So we were talking the other day about a friend of yours and a story she told you. Would you like to share about that.
Mm-hmm.
And this person who was telling her something was, you know, kind of new agey or whatever.
Yeah. So we'll try to keep it a little general as to not get too specific, but a friend of mine who lives in another country, she's going to school there and they're telling her that she needs to take a certain medical procedure if she wants to continue to go there. So she's been having a problem with it because from her point of view, she's very healthy and she's never had problems. So she doesn't think that taking this experimental medical procedure is a good idea for her health. So being a living man, I could appreciate a living woman's, you know, especially when she does her own research and stuff. Right. So anyway, her friend that she has, a couple friends, one that is back in her hometown or her home. So she's lives abroad in another country, but somebody, a friend of hers from where she lives, is a psychic and was telling her that she should take this experimental medical procedure, even though it could be something that she doesn't agree with. And the psychic said she doesn't agree with it either, but she took it because she believes now it's not as bad and maybe later it's going to be worse. So it's better to take it now and to just go along with everything, even though she wasn't directly being forced to do it. So at first my friend started to waver a little bit and like, wow, this person's psychic. And she's saying that the guys are telling her it's now a safe time to do it. Maybe we should just take this experimental medical procedure now, because maybe it's going to be worse later. And if we just go along with it now, everything will be okay. Right. And she was telling me the story, and she had a friend of hers also who said to her that kind of has the sight, and they were all people who were kind of against this medical procedure, and they're sitting around, and one of them that has this sight said to her, she's like, oh, you're going to take it. I can already tell you're going to end up taking this procedure. And my friend was like, why would she say it to me? It's crazy. So she called me and she's really upset about it. And she's like, well, you know, if these people have a contact with a so-called source or, you know, spirit guides and all this stuff, how could they be saying this? And is it true? You know, should I just do this procedure? What do you think? Or, you know, she doesn't want to do it, but she's like, what do you think? This is crazy. And it could be true. And or why would they be saying this? Because she had seen this psychic before, and the psychic was very accurate about a lot of things in her life. It's actually kind of why she moved to where she is now in that country she is. Like, not that the psychic told her to do it, but when she approached her about it and she was telling her about it, it seemed like everything was good. And it did. I mean, it really went well for her to go there. So she's like, how could it be different now? And so that's what I wanted to talk about on the show, because I think it is a valid question for her to ask. And I think that my answer is freaking legendary, if I do say so myself now. But did you want to add anything or say anything before I kind of got into what I said about that?
No, please do tell.
All right. I don't know if I missed anything, but so basically what I said to her was that just because somebody has a contact with whatever it is, source or spirit guides, or they're channeling, or they're a psychic, or whatever it is, the way you want to word it, or the way it comes through for you, or works for you, or for them, right? Whatever their skill is. I think it works internally. And I think a lot of this experience is an internal experience. And I'm going off that because of the way that we see things. We think we're perceiving things out in the physical world. And it's actually a picture that's going on upside down in the back of our brain that we're seeing. And it's at some level, our brain's really only showing us what it thinks we can handle. So it's like, what the heck are we even doing out there? So that's a whole nother subject, but that leads me to this thing where, and other people, you know, it's not like I'm the only one coming up with this idea, but they're saying how a lot of this experience is actually internal. We're using our senses. We think we're perceiving an external world where we're actually just, it's all going on in our head, really, is what's going on. And we're kind of running around like animals, which seems pretty accurate. But anyway, so if this is the case, right? If this is the case, I feel that a person could be in touch with source and could be in touch with spirit guides or the other side or whatever it is. And they could be getting a message that's filtered through their own worldview or their own belief system or the way that they see things or the way that Absolutely. Their brain is allowing them to see things. So if they think they're getting this message saying, oh, you're going to get this medical procedure, I could already see it, it's in your future. I think it has more to do with their own actions and things that they've done. And now things are trying to justify, actions are trying to justify to themselves. And then they're externally, they're looking for these people outside to put it on, to project onto. And I feel that's more what's going on, because I don't really think anybody could tell you what's going to happen in your future but yourself. They could give you an idea, like tarot cards and all this stuff. It's like, hey, like I'm the kind of person who's big picture. I could put things together and I'm constantly analyzing things. So if somebody's talking to me and telling me about their life and I know something about them, I could kind of see a pattern emerge and I could kind of help them with that. If they can't see it, I'd be like, oh, you should watch out for this. But it doesn't mean I could literally predict the future. So I think a lot of the source stuff works in the same way. And even if you can get in, if you want to say, oh, well, I'm in touch with a spirit guide and I know it's somebody that I talk to. Well, there's this concept of the Loki, of a trickster god. And I think that is what it could be. And I've heard this put so eloquently by Michael Tesserion, where he's saying that if people have shadow work that's undone, it's just like a way they see the world in a skewed way. So that trickster element's going to come out really of them, but it's going to seem like an external thing. And it's going to tell them what they want to hear. It's going to validate their what they want to do, you know. So it's so interesting. But I told her this in a roundabout way, and it really resonated with her. And you know, and I'm happy that I could do it. I'm not just saying like to brag, but at first I thought it was, I'm like, am I just like, you know, I'm like, think about this. And I just kind of threw those ideas out there. And she's like, wow, that totally makes sense. And she talked about some of those people's behaviors and how she could see how maybe they are. And again, not to judge, but maybe they didn't do this work, or maybe it's this, that they are kind of justifying things that they've done in their own life and they're putting it onto other people instead of going into the shadow work head on themselves. And again, that sucks. We all do it. You know, we all put back stuff we should work on once in a while. I guess it's possible some people do it more than others. And then maybe if someone isn't doing this work and then they're trying to give you advice, or they're saying, hey, the spirit guides are saying this, you should be like, psst, why don't you tell the spirit guides to look in the mirror? No.
Yeah, no, I totally like your view and your perspective, especially when it comes to talking about how you see things through your own filter. Like, even if, like, let's say you're like, well, I'm in touch with the spirit guides and they tell me, and okay, fine. Let's say they do tell you something, but you're only going to see what you can see through the lens that you can comprehend for yourself. I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there, but if your perspective is that we live on a sphere that spins and your spirit guide tells you you're being lifted up into space and you can see the earth and all this stuff, right? That's what you're going to see because that's the lens that you have. No one has exposed you to other perspectives, right? But
it's like the Truman Show. You can use the idea of the Truman Show, yeah. Right? If Truman was going to have a dream or a spirit guide to bring him up above what he was at, he can only perceive what he knew, and he never left that one city. So it could really only be that other city, and everything else would have to be the propaganda that was on the TV and all that stuff filling it in, you know?
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly. So you'll only be able to see through the lens that you have, unless you're open to other perspectives that people have given you.
And think about it. If there was a side of you that was in contact with all that ever was, will be, whatever, like the source, if it showed you more than you can handle and it showed you more of this world or what the true nature of this world could be, A, would you believe it? And B, would you go crazy? And then trying to tell other people would make you go crazy. What's going on? Oh my God, that's so funny.
Thank you for turning your phone off.
For some reason, the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme just started going off on my phone. I have no idea why. That's so weird. I was watching something on YouTube earlier, but I don't even know what I was watching earlier. Oh, it was just in my, that's so crazy. Oh, I guess it was just, anyway, I was like, what the hell? Because I was thinking about that when I said Seinfeld earlier. I was going to say Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I didn't. And the song started playing. I'm like, is that the end of this episode? I think that's the end of it, because that's the end of the show. They play that song.
Maybe it's triggering us to close up shop here.
I guess so. That's
right.
I wasn't even on my phone. I just had it. Yeah, it's so funny. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, to maybe to end this discussion, there was a topic that you had brought up about, are we in a loop? And if you wanted to expand upon that a little bit, I don't know how long that will take you, but.
Right. Well, I'll say that this is something that I noticed. I already had this idea. So when 2020 happened, and I started to think back about 1919. I'm like, wow, that's funny. 1919 and 2020, right? It's 100. And I used to think it should be 100 years. But then I thought about the numbers and it's kind of weird. But then I started to think about like a cycle or a loop. And then when I watched those videos about, it was the EUR. Is that the video, right? What's the name of that one?
Yeah. Yeah, EUR, it's the LHFE, Lost History of the Flat Earth.
Yeah, okay. So that one, when he started to talk about all these pictures and he started to show all these pictures of the cities from the late 1800s and how they're all empty. And he's like, why would these cities be empty? Like, how are, you know, like we never notice it because we just see it. But then if you logically think about how are they going to get everybody off the streets?
Exactly.
And it's by the shadows, it's clearly midday. Where is everybody? Not everybody's going to church. You know, if you read, even if you read accounts of history from back then, even in the 1700s, people are always going out to saloons and like to taverns and like people are always out and about. So where the heck was everybody? So if you think about, you get into these ideas about population decline that we were talking about at the beginning of this episode, if that's really a thing that happens, maybe there's a cycle that happens that we're really not aware of. That's not really talked about in history books where there's population explosions and then just they decline really fast. And maybe there's some kind of cycle that's been going on that happens with this. And it seems as if kind of like the Matrix, if you think about the Matrix, because it was always supposed to be 1999 in the Matrix. And they said that it was like the peak of human civilization. Well, if you're somebody who thinks that that is possible that there's these cycles that happen and we are kind of caught in like a matrix of an idea. What if what if history really stopped like after the Civil War? And then from then on, like the Industrial Revolution, it's just this cycle that we've been on for, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand years or whatever it is that keeps going on. And then a virus is kind of part of it and it's brought in and history is just like the last one. And every time the iteration, it doesn't have to be exactly like the other one. Certain things happen, different areas of the realm and of this world are built up and then fall. But I think that could be very, very possible. And that's kind of one of the things that put it on to me was this whole looking into the population thing and then those EUR videos and then the whole thing with the 2020. And another thing was like those orphan trains, because my mom was adopted and my grandmother was adopted as well. And it put me onto this whole other idea. I think we talked about before how we're kind of just seeds thrown and scattered and we don't even really know our own history. You know, like evidence mm-hmm. of that is this oil thing. Like it's been in the newspapers. All you have to do is go back in the newspapers and look. And they've always been talking about scarcity of resources and oil. But we didn't know about that. You know, it's like, it's so crazy how we don't have this connection with people that lived just 50, 100 years ago in our direct bloodline.
Right.
And I think that feeds into it. So if that's possible, then I think a loop is possible. And this is something we might have to do a whole other show on. We have to have a guest on about or something. But I just started getting this hint, maybe intuitionally, of how it could be possible. And I think it's something really maybe to consider, ponder. But again, it's not to put anybody into despair mode. I think it would be remarkable if that was the case, if people were able to do that. I mean, I would be like, wow, kudos to you. Like that is amazing. Now could we fucking go back to doing something that's not so crazy, but anyway, yeah. So, but again, I always, even in this episode, it's all choices people make at the end of the day. So even if that is the case, if we're on this crazy Groundhog's Day loop, maybe it's for a reason and we can't get past, maybe there's a certain point we can't get past as a people in our evolutionary, I guess that's the wrong word, but in our way to, as a people, become more like Christ beings or like a Christ consciousness, more like living in accordance with the golden rule. there's this thing we have to get over, and maybe our civilizations come up and decline as we hit this barrier that we just can't get over. And every time we get a little closer, and it's just boop, nope, back. You got to go back. You got to go back like a video game, back to the beginning. Right. And I really feel that that's possible. And there's people who are probably really aware of this, and they're maybe the ones that seem to be the ones in control, just because they have the knowledge, they have a different perspective. They could see that this is what's going on, right? This is even an idea for a movie, even if it's not true. So we're just oversharing everybody. So these people who could be the quote unquote controllers, if they're passing this knowledge down, they can always rise to the top after resets, what they think the top is. And they're just there to be the adversary, really, at the end of the day. Even if they think they like, hey, we know what's going to happen. We're going to be the rich ones. We're going to get all the resources and we're going to control everybody. Ha ha ha. But really what they're doing is they're actually testing other people in the society. And at the end of the day, once their tricks don't work, that's when we're going to pass the test. Sharon?
Exactly.
We got to stop making the decisions that make their tricks work.
A lot of us have to, right?
We all have to, baby.
Yeah.
No finger pointing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So what do you think? That was an episode, huh? I'm excited. That was a great, you know what, everybody listening right now, if you made it this far, thank you. For listening, people in the chat, thank you so much. This is why we do it. And I think we really knocked it out of the park with this one. I'm just going to go ahead and say, and I think it's because of the preparation that we did. Thank you, Sharon, so much for being such a prepared person. This episode, I think, flowed so much better because of that. So we have to remember that. I have to remember that for next time. I'm just saying we, but I have to remember that. And remember, everybody, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. That's my website. That's where you can find me. That's where you can support me. And you could also comment on this video. If you have questions, we love your comments. Please, anything you want us to talk about, let us know. Questions you have for me or Sharon, put them down below. We will promptly answer them in a very timely fashion. We've done it before. Really good on our channel. So, yeah.
Don't be scarce.
That's right. Oh, what did I just do? Yeah, don't be scarce with your resources of comments. We need your resources of comments. Send them our way. You have the resources of attention, time, and comments. We need them. Bring them to the Oversharing Show.
Yes, I love that accent. You have to keep doing that one.
Bring them to the Oversharing Show. That will close us out on that one. Yeah, because that's what it's all about. And tell all your friends. You know, that's what we could do. Today's episode number 5 is all about sharing. So you could share the Oversharing episode with a friend that you think would find this entertaining and funny. Don't try to woke rape anybody with this stuff. And that's what we're not trying to do. That's why we keep staying away from making claims and all this stuff. We're not trying to change anyone's worldview. We're just trying to share our worldviews with you and overshare them a little bit. So thank you for listening, and we really appreciate it. Sharon?
Remember that if you're not oversharing,
then you're definitely not caring.
That's right.
That's right. So get to staring at our content and keep doing it. Thumbs up on it. All right, guys. Till next time. Later. Ciao.